Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight we have another show dealing with metaphysics and spirituality and some elements of science and other subjects that may be related. I thought tonight we would talk about overcoming the pervasive darkness of arrogance. It's a mouthful, by the way. And I also thought that it was it seemed like appropriate for what's happening, at least in the United States at this time. But I think it's much bigger. It's a bigger issue, and I'm going to go into some of the metaphysical principles that are being acted out at the present time, and have been for some time, based upon who we are as human beings and the changes that are taking place in us. Most people think, I think that's just true, that humans have always, or for a long time, been very much the same. So a human being from 1,000 years ago, as an example, to maybe the average person, would think that they weren't very much different from us other than the societal changes and the technology changes. But that is not what, at least, I am going to suggest and have suggested in many other occasions. And what I'm going to be talking about tonight is really how we are changing and what the changes are, what's causing them, and where this is going to lead us, and particularly as it involves arrogance. If you would like to call in, you can. The number is on your screen, unless you're listening to tonight's show over the telephone. That's kind of a new thing, and if you are doing so, great, but you can't. At least with your phone, I don't think you can call in at the same time. Now, if you have two phones, maybe you could do that. That might create some unusual effects, but I don't know if anybody has tried that yet. But so you can actually hear this show now over the telephone if you're not by any internet source. You could just call one of the numbers that's connected with the station and listen in on the show. Isn't that wonderful? You can be anywhere, anywhere that a telephone works. Okay, so let me continue. To begin with, we are a particular kind of human being. And what do I mean by that? I mean that human beings develop certain, we'll call it bodies. Bodies are a group of senses that exist dimensionally within a part of our universe. Right now, we are physically alive. That means our consciousness is focused in and part of a physical body, which is physically alive. You following me so far? Okay, I hope so. And what that means is that we really don't use the senses in the other bodies that we have as much, because the physical senses are overwhelmingly stimulated by the much denser physical energy in this dimension of time and space. And even if that weren't true, the fact that our consciousness is focused here means that we are picking up more of the information as it comes into our senses. But both is true, so or both are true. And so what is happening is that the sense we have of reality is that this is like mostly what we experience. But I can prove to you that we have other senses and we have other bodies, because as an example, if you can tell me where your feelings are coming from and where the energy is that produces them, then we could probably come to a different understanding of what I'm suggesting. I don't think you can. I think what you can say is something about the nervous system and this and that, but you can't really talk about feelings per se. And that's because feelings exist from emotional energy, which exists in itself in the astral dimension, an actual higher dimension, if you want to call it that, than the physical one that we're in. It's not as dense by any standards, higher frequency, has a different time dilation factor, a different quantum constant. You can get in all kinds of physics issues. And so it's in a different phase in relationship to the direction of energy as it moves in another actual added dimension than this one. This one doesn't go away per se. You just add a dimension and you have a new quality, a new kind of dimension. And so feelings immediately become a sense once you have a astral body, which we have. And we have while we're physically alive. However, remember what I said about the physical body. It's extremely overrun with the sensation that this is reality. Yeah, this is all that it is. And so, although we notice that we have these feelings, we don't seem to sense them so strongly that our awareness of them gives us an accurate understanding of what they are and where they are. So we kind of just fudge and we say, oh yeah, it's just a feeling. Well, we know, I don't want a feeling, you know. But I can define them, I can explain them. Of course, that isn't what tonight's show is about. It's just trying to get all of you out there sort of on the same page. Even if you don't believe what I'm saying, you can, of course, understand it. That's okay. And then the next set of body and senses is the manasic or mental. Same word. Some people like the manasic. Sounds like a more highfalutin word. But the mental dimension, where thought itself is part of what people sense who exist in that dimension. And we still have a body that exists in that dimension while we're physically alive, and we still have senses in it. But that body is so, so finely compounded or made of energy. The energy is so fine, so refined, that we can barely sense that we have a mental body. And so thought to us is this thing that we think happens in our physical brain. It really doesn't. Thought comes from a mental part of us, a manasic part. There is a corresponding part of it that does get recorded in the physical brain. So that's so we can actually carry out some of the thought in the physical dimension that we want to do, especially as far as memory is concerned. But you should be aware that the thinking, really thinking part of us is in another dimension altogether, even higher than the astral, the manasic or mental dimension. And so our feelings in our mental body give us another completely, we'll say, different way of understanding what the universe is like. But it's pretty far removed and difficult for us to sense independent of the physical body. And what you might say, well, what does all that mean? Well, you see, these bodies that I'm talking about are really developed by different parts of humanity. There's a part of humanity that was the very beginning developmental parts of what we call humans. Some of those were more animal-like than humans, but they were still humans because they had a sense of their creator, which is the big defining difference. And they existed millions of years ago, and more than most people think of when they think of hominids, which is like pre-human or semi-human type of creatures. And they existed in a way that's somewhat different than evolutionary, although evolution is part of it, the system, and as far as the bodies are concerned, at least initially. Now, you should bear with me on this, because even if you are a staunch evolutionist, this will still make some sense. The beginning development of a human being is to really gain a good sense of the physical world, using the physical senses in as close to a unified way as possible. The more unified the senses are, the more accurate and less illusioned they are, and the more they give us good information that we can make what I would call to be, we'll say, judgment that has behind it wisdom. So we've been trying to develop that first by our physical senses. And the type of wisdom we develop from it has to do with just the ability to cooperate and share and interact with others, both human and other creatures and life forms, and non-life as well. It gives us the ability to survive here in the physical world. And this is important because, excuse me, Because if we didn't have this ability, we wouldn't survive at all as humans. We could survive as the preceding line of life development, like animals. But when you throw a sense of God in, and a sense of how to create more of God into what makes a human being in comparison to any kind of animal, you have a totally different life script. Our life script takes us away from just surviving within physical means. Our life script takes us into developing more of God in all three of the worlds that we have bodies and senses in, which by far complicates our existence, making it much more creative and much more meaningful, but also much more threatening and difficult. Animals don't have that. They have a pretty simplistic, we'll say, life script. We are extremely complicated because of this God thing. The God thing's going to come up. Now, this is really important. I'm bringing it in early now, but it's going to come up a little later in this program, and in a strange way. Because today we're talking about the pervasive darkness of arrogance, and oddly, the God thing has to do with that. Now, so here we got this process where the beginning of human beings was to eventually survive in ways in which human beings could be co-creative with God in a number of thousands, millions of ways, while they were able to survive in the physical world and then the astral and then the mental, the physical being the most challenging because the types of energies in the physical world are the most damaging if you misunderstand them. It's one thing if you misunderstand somebody's feelings or your own and you get hurt feelings or they get hurt feelings or there's some other kind of, we'll call it emotional upset. Okay, that's one thing. But it's another thing if you misunderstand somebody with a club behind you who smashes your head in, or some kind of animal that's coming to eat you, or the weather as it's turning into a monstrous storm destroying all the food you're going to be trying to eat, and many other things. If you misunderstand those kinds of things, you're in big trouble. I mean, big trouble for the future, and maybe life in general may not be so great or may end altogether. Quite different than misunderstanding emotional feelings or mental thinking. So there's no question that the foundation of physical existence has to be physical senses and thought that is derived from those senses. The first race of humans that were to do this, they're called the Lemurians by some people. There are other names for them, by the way. That group of people long ago left our world. They're still us, some of them, because the earlier human beings that incarnated, some of those continue to develop into the next major race of humans, and there are sub-races to these races. I'm not going to get real technical tonight about this. I'm just trying to draw what's the developmental issues. And so the next major race is some people call them the Atlanteans. And that group of people who lived here also millions of years ago, but also 4 millions of years, but not that long in comparison, they lived up to almost modern day, some of them. Not quite. Well, 11,000 years ago, give or take. That's still a long time ago. But it's not that long. And so they had a different focus, because they took all that the first group, we'll call them the different group of sub-races of Lemurians did, and they used that to formulate a foundation for their physical existence, which was pretty good. I mean, it wasn't the best, because these Lemurians never completed making themselves and their senses into a unified sense of God. They only got it piecemeal. And when you don't have a unified sense of God, you have a lot of illusion, and they did. And so they passed that on, because what's created in God stays in perfection, you might say, but what is not eventually fails, and it doesn't have immortality. It just keeps coming back and failing and coming back and failing until it's corrected on an individual basis, because the next race can't go back and solve the problems that the prior race did as a race anymore. Now each individual, unfortunately, has to do so. And it's a lot more difficult, I gotta admit. You know, if we all could say, well, we inherited perfect physical senses, and then after that inherited perfect astral senses, oh my, we'd be different people today. But we're not. And only on an individual basis can we then really improve these senses to get us closer to our Creator. So, I hope I'm not losing on this, because, I don't want to. Of course, I want to make sure that this makes some sense to you. Okay, so, by the way, I wanted to mention that we have more time, so don't worry. I'm going slower. It may not sound like it, but it really am to me. And I'm going slower so that we will be able to cover all this material that I want to talk about tonight. And we're going to be able to go 15 minutes after the hour rather than 5 minutes before, giving us an extra 20 minutes of program time, give or take a minute or so. So we're going to be in pretty good shape, I'd say, you know, from that. And if you can hang in there and stay with the show for that long, that's wonderful. I won't try to burn out your brain tonight, but I will say a lot of things still. Okay, so we have now these Atlantean folks. They're working on their astral senses. There's actually 7 sub-races of them. And they build their different civilizations, and they change over time. Their senses become better and better integrated. And they eventually develop the 5 lower parts of their senses into empathy, which we all have now. Every one of us, well, I shouldn't say that. There's a few people who don't have empathy, but most of us have empathy. It's a large number of us that have empathy. And so that's a wonderful thing, you know. And we got that from them, who may be in part us, because just as there were some Lemurians who still may exist today, there's even some Atlanteans, maybe quite a few actually, who evolved and moved on to becoming the next race. That's us. And us as a race, we've been around for a short time. I mean, some of us have been around in this race for about 60,000 years, give or take. But the majority of us have only been around much less than that, maybe only 10 to 20,000 years. So it hasn't been very long that there have been the kind of humans that we are used to being. And that's the kind of human that thinks first more in a monastic sense. They're sensing still in their thought more monastically than they are either directed by their astral body or directed by their physical body. They can separate their mental thought from those other two bodies. And in so doing, they can think more clearly. And they can think with greater senses of wisdom and love. And that is closer to their Creator. That's a good thing. That's why they used the word evolve a minute or two ago. Because there is an evolutionary aspect to it. It's spiritual in development, though. If the human beings aren't working feverishly trying to change themselves, they won't. And, of course, it's the terrible pressures of a physical life, if not the astral and then mental life, that produces this effect, and human beings change from a lot of the forces. Sometimes they change, though, from an inner light, where they just want to be closer to their Creator. That's a great thing, by the way. And that's wonderful that human beings can do that, because we have 2 extra senses over animals that have consciousness to them, and those senses give us the ability to understand and create or co-create with our God. Okay, so that's us. We're the ones now who have this wonderful mental nature. And you might say, well, isn't tonight's show about overcoming the pervasive darkness of arrogance? What's so great about that? Well, let's talk about it. Generally speaking, the monastic race is far more mental. It does tend to use its monastic body to be the most creative part of its existence, which is a good thing because it's more developed, it's more complex than people who use mostly their astral nature to be the most creative part of their existence, especially as far as God is concerned. So you can see we're very far advanced from where some of us were when we were Atlanteans. Now, you might say then, okay, then what's this problem with arrogance? Well, let's talk about that. You see, as something is developing, it's more prone to going off the tracks and moving in a direction that may not be so helpful. The Atlanteans went off the tracks after they developed empathy and then tried to develop some levels of super empathy, that's like godlike empathy, where people are concerned about how others feel about their own creator and to try to help them to create more with their own creator. We call it creating virtue, we being the people I know about. So that's how it was supposed to work, at least, but unfortunately they went off the tracks because once they developed enough empathy, instead of trying to develop a closer relationship with God, they tried to develop a closer relationship with people who had died from the physical world, and also a closer relationship here in the physical world with those that they could feel closer to in terms of astral aspects. And that wasn't a good thing. That's sort of the kind of effect that we're dealing with today, but not in the astral body anymore, at least not in a racial term, but in the manasic or mental body. Arrogance is a very similar kind of response. What is it? Well, people who become egotistical, which we all have some of that, I think, tend to resist the thought of others in place of their own because they want to feel more important in their mental thinking, and they want to believe that their thinking, therefore, is not only more important but more correct than that of others. So they may block out or not hear, in a mental sense, the thoughts of others. Now, other people may say things to them, but they don't process it in a way to determine the validity or not of what they're hearing. They just assume if it isn't what they think, hey, it's just wrong, and that's it. You know? That's egotism. Egotism is bad, but it's not anywhere near what arrogance is. Arrogance takes a whole new kind of approach. A person who is arrogant isn't just thinking that their thought is better than others. They're much worse. They think that the only thought that really matters is their own. And they are extremely selfish, not only mentally, but also astrally as well. So you have a much stronger astral element to them, although they hide it. And they're motivated by their desires to think in certain ways and continue to think in ways that even when they know they're wrong in a totally intellectual sense, they convince themselves through their desires that they're right. And they are extremely unloving if they're in a position of authority or power, which they seek almost like a drug, because the power enables them to remain arrogant. If they don't have the power over others, their arrogance starts to diminish. And that's where I'm giving you clues about how you overcome arrogance, you see. So people that are arrogant are non-loving people who are both egotistical, but in a twisty kind of way, in which they not only don't understand the thoughts of others, they don't want to understand the thoughts of others. They don't think others' thoughts have any relevance to anything. And it's only their thoughts or those who agree with their thoughts who they have any kind of relationship with. We could even say who they identify as fellow humans. The other people, they don't see as human beings. And that's a really bad thing. They see them as a class below them in some ways. And they are very unconnected with God. They oftentimes fake a kind of religious style of life or a quote-unquote belief in God. But underlying that, they don't believe in God. They don't think of God as being a relevant issue in their life. Just so they can say they have such a thing, they may belong to some church or whatever, but they are usually the most we'll call it, spiritual people that you will find. They're very non-spiritual. even though they may go to church or a church, it doesn't mean anything. They are not close to spirit, which is the thought of their creator. And they can't hear the thought of their creator because invariably, if they're arrogant, it's opposite or different from their thought. And we know that they reject that completely. So they reject God. Can you see the connection there? It's really important to understand this. So arrogant people are not just people who don't like other people. These are people who also reject their own God. Regardless of what kind of, you know, airs they put on and how they make themselves look when you talk to them or see them. That's a different issue. They can try to fool people. Sometimes they do. Arrogance, strangely, comes through the development of intellect. But an intellect that is trained and informed in ways that develops the lower self and the personality of a person, rather than developing a sense of higher self and a closeness to God. This takes place in some types of, we'll say, institutions of higher learning. It can happen in any kind of place or school, if that's the type of teaching that exists. Or it can happen in families and various modes of societal groupings where people just generally have adopted this, and there's a lot of people around that think that way. It's a disease, and it is contagious. If you put yourself in an environment with a lot of people who are arrogant, the chances of you becoming arrogant are much higher. Why is that? Well, it's sort of like if you are constantly treated in a way in which you're objectified and not seen as a human being unless you are willing to do the same to others, as a defense to that, some people will succumb and become like those that are around them. So it's a pretty bad situation. Generally, it does happen to people if they go to some kind of prestigious institution or college, university, whatever, for some kind of advanced learning. It's a difficult problem. That's one of the ways it can happen. The main way it happens, though, in later life, after the teenage and early adult years, is by people seeking and gaining power and influence over other human beings. That tends to aggravate and grow the pervasive problem of arrogance. And so over time, what happens is that as people seek, and of course because they're putting most of their attention and energy into gaining power, and they do gain it, they tend to then use that power to abuse others and to elevate themselves in various ways to even more and more grand power and influence. This is not something that is new. It has been with the human race a long time. But what's new about it is that because the present sub-race of humans, that's us, is so unbelievably intellectually and mentally focused on development, and because the concept of being right has become more important than the concept of giving or love, those issues have pushed human beings to the point where they're failing to develop wisdom and instead are developing high levels of egotism in younger life that leads to arrogance in middle life and older. So this is the process. Now, that doesn't mean some young people aren't arrogant. There are some. Many of those were arrogant in prior lifetimes as well. But on an average, it happens more about the way I suggested. So that by the time someone gets past the age of 28, and almost certainly past 35, the arrogance is wagging around, and you can see it all over them. It may be hidden before age 28. You might only see someone with some levels of egotism, but not necessarily the full command of arrogance. All right, so it's power and control and manipulation, and unfortunately, the seeking of it for the purpose of putting others down while one elevates and gets more power for themselves. That seems to be the poison that creates arrogance. Now, it is connected in early life to the wrong kind of education. An education where intellect is placed at a greater value by far, by many times, over love. And where we'll say knowledge is more important than consciousness. It's virtually the same thing said over again in a different way. So people who seek this are seeking to have knowledge in certain areas of life that gives them a way, a leg up over their fellow people. They might go to Harvard or Yale and get a law degree or a medical degree or something else that will give them the ability to have control and power over other people, while at the same time they gain a lot of knowledge in specific areas, and makes them be able to act out as though they really are superior to other people. And then it gets into an even more dangerous mode. Because when people get to that point, and they have the power to do so, they then seek control over others. And the control comes from systems that they have from their desires. Now, the weird thing about this is it really has to do with their personality, right, and a lot of complicated things in nature. But it's not that hard to understand from a single concept, and that is that they want to have power and influence in at least some way in life. They want to become specialists. They want to become special in some way so that they can control people based upon some fantasies that they have that oftentimes have very bizarre and dark nature to them that they don't reveal to others. It could be anything from some kind of almost slavery or even sexual issues. It can be a lot of things. It could be just other people literally worshiping them or some need for unusual amounts of fame supported by literally the kind of arrogance that only a person who has completely forgotten about everybody else and doesn't care about them could develop. So this is a scary thing. And in our world today, this has become the model that probably somewhere between 10 and 20% of our population is attempting to follow or create for themselves. It's what they desire. Now, luckily, it isn't the majority of people, but 10 to 20% is a lot of people. Like in the United States, that would be 30 to 60 plus million people who are seeking a life of arrogance. They're actually seeking in some way to become special through knowledge and control and power over others. Now, it's okay to seek to be special in the light in the mind of God and to create more light in the world and to do things that are special in that way. But if you're doing it because you want to become filthy rich, and then hire a lot of people to control their lives and make up rules and know how and what they're going to live and where they're going to work and what they're going to... I mean, it gets crazy. It gets darn crazy. And there's a lot of people. You know, like I said, 30 to 60 million people in just the United States who are into this thinking. And I'm going to tell you the groups that are some of the worst in this category are the following: attorneys. Not, and I know some attorneys don't like them very well, so I don't think that it's all attorneys. But it's certainly a bad field. If you don't want to have too much arrogance, it's not going into law is going to be difficult for you. But you can't. You can't. You just have to do some things that I suggest and then the rest of tonight's show, which we're getting to. Remember, this is overcoming the pervasive darkness of arrogance. It isn't about just being and you're stuck there. Of course, I'm going to give you some answers. Okay, so the attorneys are a problem. And so next time you call up your lawyer, you say, well, are you an arrogant son of a gun? I know. Don't mention that. Don't mention my name either. I got enough lawyers who probably don't care for me too much. All right, so, and then the next field, and this is going to sound strange because it seems like it's such a benign and giving field, are some areas of allopathic medicine, medical doctors particularly. That area has some problems in it because of the over intellect that sometimes is developed and the knowledge that's so specialized. I think we have a caller. So, caller, are you online?
I am online.
Hi, how are you?
I am really loving your discourse this evening.
Oh, I'm glad.
And because I think that arrogance really needs to be addressed. There are two points I'd like to interject. One is, you mentioned, I think I heard you talk about the chakras of people very early in your discourse.
Yes.
And I had read where circumcision on the eighth day of a male actually cuts off forever his ability to be able to access some of those higher states. And the other thing is, I know the women's libbers will hate me for this, but I think spiritually and culturally, our society has been really ravaged by the idea of women's pursuit of higher education. And I just mean that women used to be a leavening agent, and they used to at least provide some heart in a couple and in a family. And now everybody's bred to be competitive and to be linear thinkers. In fact, there's even an idea that one of the reasons there's so much autism is because left-brain people are marrying left-brain people. I mean, the surgeons and the lawyers used to marry the kindergarten teachers, but now they're marrying attorneys and engineers, so everybody's left-brained.
What a great
Not so
idea.
Funny.
Yeah.
I think women have lost that leavening agency in society because they're just competitive and cutthroat just like everybody else, and they want to be doctors and lawyers and not emphasize that heart element, you know. And even if people have kids nowadays, it's like kids are showpieces, and it's like, you know, they are used as bargaining chips just like everything else. And I mean, the heart has just gone out of the whole enterprise, in my opinion.
Well, you're saying so many great ideas and things, and some of them I was going to bring up later in the show, but one of them that I really think is probably the bedrock of part of what I was going to say in the future of the show anyway, was that that women in our particular developmental period, women are supposed to be moving more towards the focus. It's going to take about a century or so for that to fully take place, although it has started now. But it isn't going to come from women who are replicating or staying the same as men. It's the heart, as you put it, the loving side, or the more second part of God's mind's nature that I think is going to really be the element that will balance out part of what most of the male element, which has been around for thousands of years in the present race's development, as the focus. And unfortunately, it's much easier if you're a male to become arrogant than if you're a woman. That doesn't say there aren't women who have become arrogant, as you have stated, but they at least women have a better chance of it, because in the monastic part, or the mental part of the bodies, women by nature, their body actually turns it in a reverse direction from the male. The chakras actually turn in the opposite direction. You can't tell that, though. It seems like we're very similar, but there's actually this opposite. And that opposite is that they tend towards the loving nature and the giving nature of virtue in the mind of God, whereas men tend towards being strictly more towards a freedom and creative side, but unfortunately at the cost of that loving nature. So each side together can produce something when brought together, provided they're not each trying to be, unfortunately, arrogant in their own right, which is something maybe we can tonight overcome or show some ways of improving upon. All right, what part of the country are you from, by the way?
I'm a citizen of the world.
Okay, because I noticed, are you from the United States, sir?
Yeah.
Okay, go on, what were you going to say?
Now, there's just one more thing I want to interject, because I've been listening to a lot of programs and everybody's talking about the emergence of the feminine and blah, 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 and the downfall of the masculine domination. I want to just speak about loving nature and masculinity. Men get a very bad rap, and women get too much credit in a way, because when people talk about a loving nature, I think men tend to love on a grand scale. I mean, the man has the capacity to love and seed many children, and I think that gives him a focus of, he thinks about the collective. And people always talk about mothers being loving. They're loving for their children, but sometimes I wonder how loving they really are for other people's children, because it's always kind of a me, myself, and I focus. And I know I may be sounding like I contradict myself, but I just thank God for the male energy, because men do tend to be objective and fair. And I've noticed women can be so dirty and so self-centered. And I think men get a very bad rap, because I think their love just tends to be more on a larger level. I really do. And I think if it weren't for the male energy, we would be in utter chaos.
I agree with what you're saying, although it's my opinion that men have a more difficult time not falling into arrogance. They tend to have, because of the nature of the spins in their chakras and in the mental body, mm-hmm. it's easier for them to become arrogant. But mm-hmm. certainly, both sexes can develop either side of the spectrum of how they express a virtue or don't. And so
just one point, and then I'm going to get off the phone.
Okay.
Could arrogance in men be a protective device for the group? In other words, that spin that he's putting out, could that be almost like a psychic shield? Could that almost be like almost a bluff factor?
Well, now you're getting into some things that I'm not so sure that as a general principle would be true. Somebody can obviously create themselves in various ways in how they... how they create their bodies is a unique element, so that energy comes from them or reflects off of them in unique ways. But I don't think that's a general principle. I don't think it's something that's generally applied to all men or to way men in general can protect society, because men tend to be more freedom loving and more creative, but their creativity is again. Can be, unfortunately, about themselves rather than about creating more of a virtuous society with their creator being the focus.
Okay, well, listen, I'm just going to hang up and listen, but keep on talking and keep on, you know, promoting your deep ideas, because I totally have been enjoying it. So thank
Good.
You very much.
Keep listening. Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
And at this point, we've gone a little bit past our break time. So what we're going to do is take a break. But remember, we're going beyond the normal show time, so we have plenty of time to go. And I want to bring up some of the elements of our last caller. I didn't ask her for her first name. I usually do. But that's okay. Whatever your name is, caller, thanks for calling. And we'll go for a break right now, and we'll be back in about 2.5 minutes, and we'll continue about this thought.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And we're going to continue our conversation now, talking about the overcoming the pervasive darkness of arrogance. Thanks again to our last caller. And I'm going to now talk about some of the ways that I think we can make some headway. I was talking about some of the people that are having some of the most difficulty with arrogance, and there are some of the people you may not know that to be true in our society. Lawyers have a lot of problems. Some types of medical professionals, but not all. And the other thing I want to mention is that, at least as it stands right now, especially in the federal part of our government, politicians. So that's a problem because it's kind of like affecting the entire country now, because if you have an arrogance in all branches of government, then it tends to want to take power away from people. And our government in our country, being the United States, and you say our, because I know a lot of people listen to this, it may not be from the United States, but in our country, being the United States, this is what our country was founded on, was freedom in the government not seeking to or being prevented from taking power and control from the people. But when you have arrogant people in office, they want to do the opposite. And it appears that some of the most arrogant people that I am noticing these days are seeking to have public office, because that's how you get more control over people. So it's kind of like an unfortunate problem. I think the founders knew this, by the way. I don't think it was as big a problem then as it is now. So here we have maybe an understanding of what's going on right today in Washington with our Congress, particularly the House of Representatives, when tens of thousands or more people went to visit them in the last few days. They found a high proportion of the people who are pushing for health care takeover, we'll call it, not answering their phones and even taking the phones off the hook and refusing to enter into a dialogue. That's a danger signal of arrogance. And these kinds of things could lead to some very, very, we'll say, serious problems in the future. So how does arrogance get reversed? Well, one of the easiest ways to reverse arrogance in people who are arrogant, and this might apply to our politicians as well, is to have them, we'll say, reach a disastrous period of existence in their life by having a forced humility coming from a sense of being terribly publicly ridiculed and or rejected. So people who are seeking power, if they are publicly rejected, they seldom can handle that. and they will start becoming a bit more inner reflective if they can be forced to be publicly rejected. Now, some of them guard against that and try to prevent it, of course, and the system sometimes allows them to do that. But it does help. An arrogant physician who creates some mistakes because of their arrogance and their healing of certain, or helping to heal certain people, if they're publicly ridiculed, publicly, brought to some kind of justice, not necessarily in a court of law, but maybe before their own board or whatever, that's a helpful thing. That will tend to create some cracking in the arrogance, because in order for people to maintain their arrogance, they have to maintain both power and control, and they want to look better in others' eyes. So if you're, if you like this fellow John Edwards, and you want to have a lot of kids or do whatever he's doing with some gal that he meets, and he's doing it clandestinely and getting away with it, his arrogance will remain high. But if he gets caught and then is publicly condemned, somewhat ridiculed, and maybe even punished in some way, not necessarily going to jail or prison, but maybe some financial ways and other things, those are good things for helping people to start developing the opposite of arrogance, which is a sense of humility and humbleness. So these are the kinds of things that are helpful. And one of the ways to reduce arrogance is to destroy corruption. Because when people are corrupt, they become hand in hand more arrogant. And the more they can get away with the corruption, the more they have greater levels of arrogance. So if you stop corruption, if you stand in the face and are unwilling to allow it to continue in various ways, you're also stopping the pervasive darkness of arrogance. And most people don't know that there's a connection there. And in the past, when there was corruption among humans, if you go back to Atlantean peoples, which is a long, long time ago, before history, of course, of our time anyway, and you look at what went on there, then instead of arrogance, you had the corruption caused a sort of desire for brutality and slavery and all kinds of terrible elements. And of course, some of that is mixed in with arrogance in our time today, but even more in our history, because it was closer to those earlier times, like the Romans I'm thinking about. But at any rate, if it's more astral, it's more into, again, the emotional element, and it has more connection to the physical world. When it's more mental, it's more about this pure power sense and controlling people's lives for the acting out of the desire of the person who's arrogant. So it isn't so much that the person who's arrogant is getting something directly from an individual. It's more of an indirect thing that they're controlling X number of people's lives, and they just find that to be really neat. They like doing that. And so if we're going to reverse this problem, we have to stop corruption that is being enacted in mostly monastic or mental ways, and that tends to affect people in more distant realms, but not always, as compared to millions of years ago, or at least tens of thousands of years ago for sure, and then up to millions of years ago. And it is important for us to then consider the following. How, if a person is truly not just egotistical but arrogant, then what are the principles, what are the methods that can be used that are not evil in themselves to try to prevent them from being arrogant And since there's a connection between corruption and arrogance, to prevent the corruption. Well, the first is to avoid physical force, if possible. Only when arrogant people are themselves being physically violent would it be appropriate to use any kind of physical force to, quote-unquote, defend oneself or to act in self-defense. But if you use physical force other than that, that's not a solution, because the person doesn't, in our race today, doesn't connect their arrogance very much to the need for physicality. So it might have worked. Interestingly, that could have worked millions of years ago, but it can't work today any longer. The same is true about emotional force. It doesn't do virtually any good, and you might have seen this in recent times, but you could probably look around the world and see it all over the place. It doesn't do much good to try to astrally or in a feeling sense overwhelm or convince or whatever, cajole, threaten an arrogant person, because in a strictly emotional sense, there isn't enough connection any longer to who they really are. And they also may see that also as a sign of weakness, oddly, and that they might use against people who do that. Some people feel differently about this. Some people feel that you should be very, very demonstrative and, you know, emotionally reactive. But it doesn't, it won't tend to, in my opinion, correct the arrogance that we have today. Instead, the way you correct the arrogance of today is you bring truth in and wisdom into the all of the activities and all of the thoughts and theories that are being promoted by those who are corrupt and or arrogant. And so then, in that way, when faced with truth head on, and especially if it's done publicly, the arrogant person now is facing that important ingredient of being rejected and humiliated and given the public scrutiny necessary and exposure of their arrogance. Remember, all arrogance is untruthful at some level. So if a person is completely truthful, they can't be arrogant, because truth is a virtue. It's a mental virtue. It's a part of our Creator. And arrogance is a rejection of the Creator. So innately, if someone, even if it's the President of the United States, if they are arrogant, they are also lying to you, also being untruthful. You may not know what the untruth is, or you may not be able to dispel it in an argument or publicly at that moment, but they are. And it's particularly true when you pick it up and you say, well, that person's been really arrogant. Well, then you know that they're also lying. They're also telling you an untruth, but you may not know right away what it is or how you can prove otherwise to others. So it's getting to the truth that is going to be the winning ticket to overcoming this pervasive darkness. And we're not going to be able to do it with running around like crazy people with weapons and fighting. And we're not going to be able to do it with screaming and yelling and ranting and raving, because that's another time, a way a long time ago. And if it ever worked then, it could only have worked then. It can't work today. These kinds of evils we're talking about, and almost all evil today follows from this arrogance issue, can only be dealt with the light of truth. And it should be done publicly. And it should be done with no, without giving leave to the other person in some way to squiggle out of it, to kind of gracefully exit from the exposure. They should be hit hard, but hit mentally. and exposed as being liars and untruthful, and that will get them to stop being arrogant. And at the same time, it may also stop them from damaging others and from acting in a position in which great harm can happen to huge numbers of people, because arrogance today is rewarded with greater and greater power. And so the people who are most arrogant are the people most in control, and they have the most amount of damage they can do to large groups rather than just individuals. I hope you understand it, because it's a bit different than it was thousands of years ago, except for the few people who were arrogant and kings or noble people. They might have been able to exercise a little bit of what I'm talking about back in those days, or some, depends on what their position was in society. But on an average, there were nowhere near as many arrogant people as there are now. It's a really serious issue. Remember, it has to do with this intellect being developed outside of the scope of virtue. It's a scary thing. Now, let's talk about that. Virtue in itself is the creation or co-creation of what God is in the physical world. It's like, or whatever world you're focused in developing in. This virtue can be created while when we pass on to the astral world and live in an astral existence. Then in astral terms, the energy that is there, the virtue is to try to enlighten that energy instead of just the physical energy of here. But no, nothing changes. We're still trying to create, as souls, we all came here, to try to create more of an existence in which there would be enlightenment, an improvement, so that more of God is expressed in all of the forms around us. So virtue is literally light in form. And people who have developed an intellect that rejects God, that puts God at a distance from themselves, even if they pretend to go to church, and some people do that, and others pretend not to. I'm not saying that people who go to church are necessarily close to God, but I'm saying some people do that as a defense. But if, regardless, the bottom line is that this intellect and the need to have the intellect is being done for self-aggrandizement, not for the creation of more of God. And when you want to create more of yourself in place of God, that's the very serious wrong mission for that soul to incarnate to be doing. Definitely going in the wrong direction. It moves you closer and closer to becoming evil. Now, it doesn't mean you are evil. Evil has another important element, and that is that evil people, while they almost always are arrogant, also are seeking to destroy God on a conscious level. Not subconsciously, but consciously. Arrogant people may do some destruction of God without question in the world, and may be very unvirtuous, but they don't do so on a conscious level. They don't think, well, gee, I'd really like to get rid of this God. And they may claim they don't believe God exists, but they usually do believe it because they want to destroy it. They enjoy the destruction of good, and they'll do it as much as they possibly can. That is not necessarily everybody who is arrogant, but arrogant pushes you and moves you closer to being evil, because you're at that, in the stage, step-by-step stages, you're moving more in that direction. Okay, what other things can we do to overcome arrogance as far as our world as it is today? Well, since we're in the fifth sub-race of the fifth race, which is the worst possible place to be about this whole issue, and that's the reason it's happening, we can look forward to the sixth coming in, and what our caller talked about earlier. The sixth sub-race is a more feminine-focused sub-race. By nature, people will look at their feminine qualities a little more strongly, and they will tend to balance out some of the more male aspects of mental thinking that are, we'll say, aberrant. Not the good things. We don't want to get rid of freedom. We don't want to get rid of creativity and purpose and will. But we want to balance those, as I've talked about in the last few months, with goodness and love and consciousness, which is inclusiveness, and consciousness is the ability to take knowledge and apply it to other things. See, if you go to school and you just get intellect and knowledge, but you don't learn how to raise your consciousness by being able to create new things with it and apply it to many other parts of existence, then the knowledge becomes of no value in creating virtue. It won't create any more light. And that's the problem. So by nature, we're moving in that direction. It's going to be about a century before we see a more even distribution of people that are starting to look like they're moving towards the sixth sub-race of the fifth race. What are the differences in terms of society? Well, one is that the values of society will shift. First of all, more leaders will become women than men. We're gradually moving in that direction, but it's going to take some time. And those women won't be women who imitate the arrogance of male leaders today. They'll be the opposite. They'll have greater wisdom and love in their leadership. At least I'm hoping that's going to be true. That's what's supposed to happen. Because they're focusing on the sense of understanding God within themselves. The five other senses of form have been dealt with through the five sub-races of human beings. But now they're going to be dealing with the focus of understanding God as it's applied to society. Not as it applies to them as an individual, because that's reversed in reverse order to the way the sub-races are developed. But the way it's going to be applied in society, if you're a leader, is going to really change. And so women leaders, 50 years from now, 100 years from now, I hope and expect, will be leaders who take on and try to co-create the virtues that we, today we are things we only talk about, but they'll actually become parts of society. And they will literally condemn and ridicule those people who, be them men or women, who have the trophy of arrogance in their closet and they're seeking to control. There will be so many other parts of society that will be developed to do this, that it's hard for us to imagine today that this is going to happen. Because in today's world, there's very little that protects us from this sort of thing. But it will become, after, unfortunately, some bad events, possibly, in the next number of years, it will become a necessity that we will come to appreciate and need to have a more spiritual society, one founded upon a relationship of a different magnitude than in the past with our Creator. And one of those things is going to be that leadership will be dependent upon humility and understanding and listening to both the will of people mixed with the will of God. And the two will be attempted to be brought together into one, not ignoring people and trying to control and manipulate them at all. Just the opposite. I'll give you a more concrete example. Let's say we have Congress 50 years from now. Let's make it 100. I don't know if we'll make it 50, but let's say 100 years from now. That Congress, instead of leaving the phones off the hook and voting for something that's going to give them a lot more power and control over their constituents in the whole country and make it more socialistic, maybe even communistic, instead of that, the concern will first be what gives the people more empowerment? What gives the people more freedom? What gives the people more love and consciousness? And what allows the people to be self-creative? Because we can't create them. They have to create themselves. That's what God decided in the first place. God, life was going to exist to be self-created so that it could become part of God rather than a puppet show of God. And so these leaders, who will more likely be women than men, will see this. Not all of them will be women, but regardless, they'll have the same kind of connectiveness that I'm talking about with each other. That a spiritual society will come first, whereas today I don't think it comes at all. I mean, I don't know who, I don't know anybody that's talking about, yeah, we need to have a spiritual society that is in some way, as a part of the creative mechanism of the society from any political standpoint. There are those that are doing it outside of politics, but I don't know anybody doing it within. Maybe there are, and I'm just not familiar with them. I just don't bump into them. I don't hear them. Okay, so this is what it's going to be, and it's a very different thing. And overcoming arrogance will be brought about by mechanisms put in place that don't exist today that literally bring almost immediate spotlight on anybody who is doing corrupt things and who is arrogant and who does not have concern or caring for what other people think or do and only want to control and manipulate and have power over people. These people will become like the worst pariahs. They'll be looked at as some kind of monsters that everybody will, you know, just want to turn away from, and nobody will listen to or have anything to do with in any kind of, we'll say, close way. That's the kind of society we're moving towards. But it's going to take 50 to 100 years, I think, to get there. And that's maybe on a good day and on a good planet. The other side is, what if all the arrogant people continue to grow, and if the world goes that way, and then I don't want to think about that, because that's not what tonight's show is about. We're talking about overcoming it. We're not talking about becoming destroyed by it. Remember, the downside of arrogance is eventually evil. That's my last statement about that to think about, and let's hope that we don't ever get to that point. I'm going to push very hard that we won't. The spiritual group I'm a member of, we work very hard to try to keep us towards the better side of things and not move in that very dark direction. That doesn't mean we don't come across corruption, arrogance, etc. Unfortunately, because of what we do, we are in the midst of a storm of it, sometimes directed right at us. So you should be aware of that. I just wanted to mention, if you haven't had a chance, check out Soul Balance. You can get it from Life Balance Association with a gift to them. You get a whole 135 tablets and 24 enhanced capsules and 24 strengthening capsules. If you use the whole thing, it affects your entire etheric system and will change the relationship and balance of your chakras so that you will be both healthier and more together and better able to sense. Your life will work out better for you. It really works. I'm talking about fundamentally controlling and curing some elements of what we call the diseases of the spiritual nature. Okay, if you want more information, you can call 602-472-5127 and check it out with them and see what they have to say about it. And I got to take that out of there. Someone grabbed something from me. It's no longer current. They threw it out. It was in there by mistake. If you want to contact us, you can at Thought. If you want to contact me, you can get us at thoughts@whylifeis.com. And if you haven't heard about ideal cell sorption resveratrol, we're really working on making more of this stuff. It's great. Really, really works. It's the best resveratrol out there, period. I'm going to just tell you, because I've tried all the other stuff. This stuff will really make you younger, but more importantly, you'll not only live longer and look younger, et cetera, but you'll be healthier. And it's amazing stuff. And you can see the results after taking, say, one or two bottles of it. And if you don't believe it, try the VF formula on your pets, because it works so well on them. You'll be absolutely amazed. You'll say, well, I can see it on my dog or cat. I'm going to start taking them for myself. ForeverYoungProducts.com, 800-777-7850. Give them a call. Okay, we're out of time for tonight. I think that I got a lot said. I hope it's a lot to think about. There were some things I skipped over, but that's okay. We got a lot in tonight. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.